From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Nice to have you with us. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. Let's open the week in review with one of the really powerful and moving conversations we've had in many months on Connections. It's the story of a church divided over whether it should accept and celebrate gay members. Back in 1972, the Methodist Church adopted official language saying that homosexuality is against God's will. Every 4 years, its international council meets, and in recent years, there's been great controversy over the church's anti-gay position.
This past week, the council met once again and voted on whether essentially to scrap the anti-gay language and move in a more inclusive direction. By a vote of 52-48, the Methodist Church decided not to change. It will retain its anti-gay language. That has sparked calls around the world for more progressive congregations to splinter off and form their own church. And in Rochester, the largest congregation is already considering that option. It's Asbury First United Methodist Church. Led by Reverend Stephen Cady, Asbury First could vote within a year or so on its next move.
We sat down with Reverend Cady about the difficult decisions ahead. And first, you'll hear Corey Talenda, a member of the Asbury First congregation, who is gay.
For me in my life and walk with God, I actually feel very blessed to be a member of Asbury First United Methodist Church. I think the people there are very caring and accepting, and the denomination on an international level might not, but the people of Asbury First really do. So I want to continue to be a member there. Sometimes it is a little struggle dealing with being gay and not having the overall organization accept you, but I look at all the good that Asbury does for the community.
And have you had any moments in your life as a congregant where you thought, I should think about leaving this church?
I would say no. Earlier in my walk with God or coming out, I really had internal questions or an internal struggle. But once I found Asbury about 7 years ago, I think I started attending there. I just realized that there was a lot of love, compassion, and we have a lot of positive outreach in the community. So I think that's very important for me to be a part of.
Reverend Dr. Cady, I'm going to ask you, Reverend, the same question I asked Corey. I asked Corey, as a gay man, are you thinking, I don't know if this is the right church for me. I don't know if as someone who is a leader who views this as a disastrous turn or a disastrous continuation and strengthening of a policy that you think is humiliating and discriminating, can you stay in the church? And is that a fair question?
It's a totally fair question, and it's one I've been praying about, thinking about, talking about with the people that I love. Everything lastingly good in my life has come one way or another through the Methodist Church. And I would say my sense of hope, my sense of call, my sense of justice, my sense of humor, such as it is, my sense of identity, all of these things have come from the Methodist Church. And the reason I care so much about this issue is because I'm a Methodist. And I learned to care about people who love differently than I do through the Methodist Church. And I'm not willing to give that up. That said, it may be that I knew we were at a tipping point, and it may be that we've reached a breaking point. And the irony in this is that We're a denomination that already says we recognize that divorce, while it's not always good, it's sometimes best. And so maybe this is the time for us to divorce as a denomination. The question is who keeps the kids and who gets the bank accounts and all those things that you have to figure out in a divorce. But the truth is we may have reached that moment. I'm not saying for sure that that's where we are. We'll see where things come down in April when the Judicial Council rules. But I do think the movement is happening that way.
How much have you watched over the years what's happened with Corpus and Spiritus Christi and the fissure there and the independence, the stepping away from the Catholic Church? How much have you watched that and maybe pondered in your own mind, is that a path that we need to take?
To be perfectly honest, I haven't been able to, I'm fairly new to the Rochester community. I've been here about 6.5 years, which Spiritus Christi, the split, had happened.
Sure, yeah.
Long before that.
What, 20 plus years, something like that?
Yeah, before I got here. Yeah, so yeah. I have known about it, I have recognized it, and I affirm reasons and why they stepped away. The difference for me would be I would want to remain a part of some kind of connectional system. And Spiritus Christi may say the same thing. I don't want to speak for them because I don't know.
I take the point, sure.
I don't know how they would respond. But I would say for me, and I would say for Asbury First, we're Methodist, and there are good reasons to be Methodist. And in my mind, I would want to remain with a Methodist system. As I've said to my conservative brothers and sisters within the Methodist denomination, like, look, there's no other place right now for us to go. Where do we go? I mean, my more conservative friends would say there are the Nazarenes, there's the Wesleyans, there's the Free Methodists, there's any number of other Methodist breakoff denominations that someone could go and be a part of. Right now, for a more progressive Methodist, there's no other denomination to be a part of.
I have seen some anguish on your face this hour. How is this impacting you personally?
It's hard to watch something that you love struggle. And the truth is, it's not really about me in the midst of this, but it's all of those people who saw the news, who got the alert this week, you know, the New York Times, the NPR, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Twitter, and Facebook, and all of the feeds that came out, who we will never hear from, who won't call this show, who will never darken the door of a church because of the way that they have heard the church treat them. And I'm in this because I think there's something worthwhile in a church, that there's a kind of life that is offered that is not offered in other places. And I don't mean that the church has a monopoly on the truth. I don't believe that. But I do believe that we have a way of sharing about what leads to life. And that's our business, and we'll never get a chance to share it because of the way that this issue has been handled, and I mourn the loss of that.
Next, we welcomed a man named Luis Gonzalez, who recently got out of jail. He was released in December, and it's been a struggle. When he got out of jail in Monroe County, he had no transportation, and he owed money for parking tickets. He had almost no cash, very little clothing. And he found a space in a local shelter, but it's been difficult to find work.
In the United States, more than 80% of people who are incarcerated end up going back to jail or prison within 5 years. That's because they often turn to crime after they fail to find a job or housing. In Rochester, the JPC, the Judicial Process Commission, is looking for volunteers to mentor former inmates. You're going to hear mentor Steve Matilde in this clip, but first, here's Lewis.
There's challenges, but you know, I'm going forward with those challenges right now and trying to get back into school and dealing with society. And Steve is a very good mentor.
Okay. Do you recall before you met Steve and you know, you're starting to think about release, did you feel like society cares about you, cares that you're going to be successful?
Somewhat. But my main focus was just to go forward and try to succeed outside of jail.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I just we'll talk this hour about some of the barriers that are up, because there's going to be some people who judge you, maybe don't want to hire you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's part of this whole calculation in terms of what do we do as a society. As Sheriff Baxter said, the government can't do everything. His office can't do everything. I mean, there's a lot of different sort of slices of responsibility here. But, Lewis, are you an optimist about how things are going right now? Are you feeling like, you know, you're going to work hard and there's going to be a path for you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like, you know, as long as I go forward, and only myself can stop myself, you know. And other than that, just I'm moving forward. And Steve been very successful of helping me, taking his time with the challenges I have and need. And he's been supportive.
I want to talk to Steve Matilde, who is a mentor in the Judicial Process Commission Men's Reentry Program and has been working with Lewis. So do you work with one mentee at a time?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. One at a time, and roughly a year is what you give.
Correct.
How long have you been doing it?
3 years now, and in some cases I'll follow people, such as the last mentee I had. I'm still seeing him. We get together for lunch. He's doing very successful. He's working. He's about ready to move into a place on his own, a nice apartment from a single room. So it's been 3 years, and Lewis, I have to say, is one of the most positive people that I've met. He invigorates me. As hard as it is for him sometimes, such as when we had the cold spell, and he's walking around with socks on his hands so his hands wouldn't freeze because he didn't have gloves, and he's positive about it. He's joking with me about this. I mean, so I see it as a struggle, but he's been very, very positive. And it just invigorates me how positive he is about doing well. I'm going to get there. I'm going to be okay. And he responds very well to constructive criticism. And I do criticize him quite a bit, but he's very good at accepting that. So he has got more out of me by just his attitude, always positive, always kind of joking, you know, at anything. And it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for him getting out of jail. Where is he going to sleep? We had a really hard time getting him into a shelter. Conditions in the shelters aren't all that great. He's sleeping on a cot. He has a little bit of a back problem, so his back's been bothering him, sleeping on an army cot. You know, clothes, getting up in the morning and finding that he got up at 6, but there was no food left for breakfast at the shelter. These are things that he struggles with, just the bare necessities to get him going.
But think about the challenges that people like me, I don't think about every day.
Right.
You know, and then maybe we'll read an article about recidivism and crime rates, and we'll go, boy, that's really high. I wonder what's going on. Well, what do you think's going on? Even if Lewis has a really positive attitude and is determined to make good decisions and work hard and find a way, he has to find someone to give him a job. Early on, where is he sleeping? How is he getting around? You mentioned $3 for a bus pass that he doesn't have. I'm going to be blunt, Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
I get why people steal. I get why things happen when they're released.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It's really hard to get your head around.
It goes back to Maslow, right? So you walk out of jail and there's nothing there to eat. You're going
to
eat. If you have an addiction, you're going to feed the addiction.
Right. He called me one day and he said that he's been approached a couple times to make some easy money. And we know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He said, no, I turned it down. He said, you know, I don't want that. I want to better myself. And that's, I tell him, call me whenever you want to call and talk, you know. But he's had opportunities to make easy money and he's turned them down. Did not have anything in his pocket, like I said, to get that bus pass or to get that bottle of water that we take so much for granted that I understand more now, and I want to understand. I want to go to more of his appointments and see what it's like, the waiting you have to do, all of this stuff that you have to go through that can be very, very depressing. So I am just energized by him,
Lewis, if you don't mind, let's kind of go through some of those specifics then. You get released in December.
Yeah.
Did you find a place, and are you comfortable where you are?
When I got released, I was at a family house, but that was only for, you know, a short time. Until I was at a friend of a family house that I grew up with, took me in for a while, but I ended up going through the resources with social services to place me into a shelter, and they denied me, and basically I got back and did a whole nother application for social services, and then they approved me, and then I got in the shelter. So probably like between the time I was released in December, probably the beginning of February.
That's where you are now? You're doing okay?
There's challenges in there and stuff like that. Like Steve said, it's not comfortable, but somewhere from being outside, you know. And now the process of me finding a room in house or apartment with social services, just sitting back waiting for that to happen.
When you're looking for work, what kind of work are you looking for? What are you trying to do?
Basically, I'm just looking for work at this time, just to get on my feet.
He applies to quite a few jobs a day, and he's applied to places like Dunkin' Donuts or McDonald's or any place that will hire him. He's not had any success yet, but we're trying.
Finally, we sit down with two Rochester High School students who recently met President Barack Obama. The students attend the Young Men's Leadership Academy, and they joined hundreds of students during February break in Oakland for the National Conference on My Brother's Keeper. It's an initiative that President Obama launched in 2014, and it's designed to help young men of color in urban settings.
In this clip, the students discuss the ways that discipline is changing in school. More schools are moving away from outright suspension and expulsion and moving in the direction of restorative practices. That means the students who are in conflict will sit down with their peers in a circle and have a conversation. They'll talk about who feels wronged and why they were hurt. The goal is to find resolution without violence and to find a solution without anyone being suspended or missing class time. Later in this clip, you'll hear professor and author Victor Rios, who speaks a lot about this around the country. But first, you'll hear Rochester students Tim Frazier and Jacquez Cochran.
The teachers that have most of the power, basically, because that's who we're with. We're not with the principals who have power. We're not with the assistant principals. We're with the teachers all day. and they feel as if they can come at us any type of way. So when I led that circle, and it was like me doing the facilitating, me doing the talking, a lot of them were like acting like the kids in class, their head was down, or they was playing fidgeting with their hands. It's kind of weird.
What did you make of that?
I took advantage of it. I got my points out. My friend, you know, we talk at the lunch table about why I just got kicked out of class. So I took advantage of that and telling them their side of the story, them explaining to me what they were thinking. And then they say, like, maybe, like, they had a problem at home or it got dragged to work or something. But I'm guaranteeing that their problems at home is not guaranteed. It's guaranteed I'm not, like, worse than the problem that we're facing in our community.
Yeah, Jacquez, Tim, when you circle up, there's a stereotype that boys and men open up less or less, you know, sort of powerfully. Does that start to change? Do you see this as an opportunity, especially for boys and men, to open up in ways that maybe stereotypically they're not as used to? Tim?
Yeah, like the little seventh graders and eighth graders, they're like really, really quiet. And like doing the circles, we tend to see that they're like actually really loud now, and they just like laugh, play around with each other and stuff like that. And one thing I think that really changed them out is where my people are at the game. So I think really all schools should try to practice that one game to open up to people.
You see boys and men opening up more?
Yeah, it's like building a trust, because you know, if you're a man and you don't trust, or young man, I'm not a man yet, but seeing as like, if I don't trust him or I don't know that young man, I won't tell him my problem. But if Tim is right here, of course, since I trust him, I can tell him whatever I need to, and we can express it like that. But men, like boys and men not opening up is a way that like we were raised, or the way that you like you should be as a man, the principle as a man, you shouldn't be open, or you shouldn't open up to anybody like that. So breaking that policy, or whatever you want to call it, it has been big.
Men have feelings.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Absolutely. Dr. Victor Rios, I don't want to sort of pose a question and make it seem like, well, if you only had restorative practices and circling up when you were growing up, that your childhood would have looked different. I mean, you certainly had a lot of challenges that you describe in your TED Talk, and you know, and I really feel for that. But do you think in your own mind that things might have gone differently at different times in your childhood if circling up was more a thing when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, what happens in schools is that more and more teachers are playing the role of being not just an educator, but also a social worker, a therapist, a hero, a shero, a healer. And what happens with children that come into the system at a young age with trauma and with stress and with poverty and with need is that the only person, the only real kind of adult sometimes that could potentially provide them some guidance, some restoration in their life could be that educator. So if there were, or their peers, right, but facilitated by an educator, if there were those circles when I was little, I mean, it would have started the process of helping me learn to heal, because this is restorative justice at the end of the day. It's about healing communities, and it's about healing individuals. And when you start that process of healing, you start to see people open up, people improve relationships, and then young people are ready to learn. So when you teach to the heart, the mind will follow. And a lot of teachers, I would say the majority of teachers, understand this. They want to teach to the heart, right? And then focus on the academics. But sometimes we have test scores we're relying on. We have big tests coming up. We have college, you know, readiness. We got math to teach them. And teachers get caught up in that world because that's what the system expects, that they teach kids, you know, the arithmetic. They teach kids the literature, and in that pressure to teach kids the arithmetic and the literature, sometimes, you know, the teacher's not able to work with them on the life skills, on the healing part. But teachers have that purpose. I mean, I cannot think of any other profession where someone signs up for maybe 20% less pay than their academic credentials, an average of 6 years of college education for educators, could pay them in an open labor market besides education. And so folks sign up to be teachers because it's in their heart to help others. And so when we provide those educators the right resources and the time for them to implement these circles for the time for them to teach young people life skills and connect to them emotionally, then we start to see the difference in terms of young people being able to open up and be ready to learn.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR
88.5 FM.
89.5 is WEOS, and that's Finger Lakes Public Radio.
Wow, we need to get better at that.
There's an 88, there's an 89. Just look for the fives. 88.5.
We're also on the WXXI mobile app, if that's easier.
No five, then.
He's Evan, I'm Megan. Have a great weekend,
high
everyone.
Five.
And we will talk to you Monday.
High five.